Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Pfeiffer.
Please, come in. Hello.
Hello. He's a stranger. We're just gonna let him sleep in our house. Hello.
Hello.
Did you know he had a wife? He has pictures of you in his luggage.
What were you doing in their luggage?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pfeiffer Fridays, where we walk you through the films of one Michelle Pfeiffer, and every F word automatically has a silent P. I'm Michael McLean.
And I'm Jerry Downey.
And today we're covering 2017's Mother! Exclamation point, starring Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem, Ed Harris, the Gleason brothers, Brian M. Dommel, and of course, La Pfeiffer as the mysterious woman.
And we are very lucky to have a special guest with us today, another dear friend of mine who has recently launched her own horror podcast. So she is our resident horror guru for this Michelle movie. Mm. We have Miss Sheree Bohannon with us.
Hi, thanks for having me, y'all.
We're so happy you're here.
So excited to have you.
Happy to be here. I'm also happy to cross this movie off my list. It's been there for a minute. So I was very excited when you were like, let's do this one.
Yeah, it's perfect for, you're definitely the girl for the job then with your podcast.
Yes, there's a lot to talk about. I'm excited.
And I think before we really get into it, the most important question for you, Sheree, is your sink braced?
I'm going to double check down. I'm very worried.
I may ask you that several times over the course of the podcast because we have to make sure your sink is braced.
We have to, because that's what's most important.
Jerry, that's very triggering. That's very triggering.
We can work from there, but the sink must be braced.
Yes.
Actually, I'll be back in two. I need to go check if my sink is braced. Y'all go on without me.
Oh yeah, please. Do what you need to do.
PSA, America, check your sinks. Are they braced?
If you see Stevie Budd show up at your house, be sure to check. That's a warning sign. So if you didn't know before, Sheree, we are a Michelle Pfeiffer podcast. So what is your first memory of Michelle Pfeiffer? What's your first sort of gateway movie for her?
I thought about that question more than anything else because I knew it was coming. what I feel has happened is I probably saw like Scarface or Grease 2, but didn't resonate who she was because I was such a baby.
Yeah.
And so when when Batman Returns, which is really no,
Catwoman. It can be called
movie.
Catwoman. We can call
Listen,
it Catwoman.
That's what I do. Michael Keaton's fine with it. He's like, I know why you watch this. And I'm like, thank you, Batman. but I think that was the first time where I was like, Michelle Pfeiffer is the same person in these other movies I've been seeing.
Yeah.
Because I was an older child by then, so I could appreciate art and talent.
And that is one of her most talented performances, without a doubt.
What she was able to do for a comic book movie just doesn't get done often, which is why we have so many DC mishaps now, and a lot of hit and miss from the Marvel world, because people are like, it's a comic book movie, just go do things. Like, yeah. She pops up in Ant-Man and the Wasp, but I'm like, oh, remember, we can do things well, y'all. And they're like, what? Hush, child. Hush, hush, hush. We're going to make the Hulk again.
So for sure. She really kind of started the mold for creating dynamic comic book characters, for sure. Anyway, go ahead, Jerry. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, for Mother, I think we are actually all at different points in terms of how many times we have watched this.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure Michael is more than me. This was only my second. And Sheree, this was your first, correct?
Yes. This movie happened to me 48 hours ago.
Oh my God. You said it happened to you.
Happened.
It happened. I mean, I guess I could have hit stop, but I didn't. So I am complicit. But
honestly, Michelle's only in the first hour. So if you just stopped the movie there.
You have enough to talk about.
Yeah.
When she left, we could have stopped. because at least she was giving me something. I don't think, I don't know what was supposed to, this is a whole, I'm going to wait because I just have so many thoughts and rants, and we could, I would accidentally start talking about my stuff right now. And then it'll be like, and back to your other questions. Yes. 2 hours later.
Michael.
Yeah.
Third time, fourth time?
Fourth time. Fourth time. So I saw this in theaters back in 2017. I was trying to remember if what like the audience response was like to this when I was sitting in the theater watching it, especially towards like the last hour when it just becomes, it just is full chaos reigns. And we're just on this runaway train ride of that second half of the movie. I remember there being outcries. I don't remember anybody walking out, but there are, and you know the scenes I'm talking about, there's some scenes here that people were rightfully yelling, making noise about. Yeah. So that was the first time I'd really ever been to a movie where I had heard those kinds of things, where it wasn't, you know, a woohoo cheering, you know, like in a superhero movie or even like a movie musical, you have clapping, you have cheering. This was where I really heard really big outcries from people of what was going on. And I was so intrigued by it because I'd never had an experience like this before. And I think I just wanted to keep on solving the puzzle of this movie. And so I think I watched it the following year, like in 2018, I watched it again. And then there was a Letterboxd scavenger hunt during the pandemic where you just kind of follow prompts and find a movie that fits those prompts. And one of the prompts during the pandemic was find a movie that has an F cinema score rating. And this was, and Mother is one of the very few movies to hold that distinction. So I was like, well, out of all these movies, I guess I'll watch Mother. And then Jerry and I decided to come up with the Michelle Pfeiffer podcast and who is in this movie but Michelle Pfeiffer. So here we are at number four.
I love that you just blamed me for number four. I would never have watched this a fourth time had we not started this podcast.
Hey, I'm much like Javier Bardem, I'm gaslighting you.
Oh, Jesus. We have so much Bardem to discuss.
Yeah, so that's my experience with Mother. I don't think I need to watch this a fifth time. I think I've got it.
See, I'm like you. I saw it in theaters.
Okay.
And I have vivid memories of seeing this in theaters. I was texting Sheree, and I was just like, 2017 Jerry went to some 10:30 matinee of Mother, ordered his like fried egg BLT breakfast sandwich.
10:30 in the morning?
Okay. I had to have seen it right when it started. So I'm thinking this is just a horror movie because yeah. That trailer gives you jack shit. Yeah. About what you're going to experience after the 40-minute mark when I personally stopped giving a shit. And so I'm there with my breakfast sandwich, just watching this movie going, okay, we're fine. I'm not really digging Jennifer Lawrence or Javier Bardem, but then Michelle Pfeiffer knocks on the door and I was just like, queen. Because once again, this was a kind of a break for her. This was her first time back on the big screen after 3-4 years or so.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, oh my God, she is incredible. And then they took her away from me and gave me the last hour of that movie. And 2017 Jerry was an angry homo.
Crinkling the foil and paper of your breakfast sandwich.
Just like, what in fresh fucking hell did I just watch? And luckily, I was on Letterboxd in 2017. So I have a review I can look back at to be like, oh, I was mad about this movie. I was very angry that I had to sit through this movie.
Yes.
I've made it this whole time without any spoilers or any inclination about what is happening in this movie. And in hindsight, it's because nobody wanted to talk about it, which I assume I knew nothing because it was like this really good movie that people slept on. And this was not the case.
Yeah, even the people that do talk about it, it feels like everyone is on a different roller coaster with this movie. Uh-huh. And they're talking about their ride. So even like the longest review, you're never going to get spoiled on what happens in the movie because they're talking about their experience. And it feels like your response to this movie is whether you enjoyed that roller coaster or you wanted to get off before you even went down the first hill.
Yeah.
Which is odd. You don't come across movies like that. It's very experience based.
Yeah,
I would agree with you about that.
I wanted off the ride from the beginning, but then Michelle Pfeiffer showed up and I was like, okay, I'll stay on. And then she left and I was like, should I have gone with her? Is she coming back for me? And she did not. And so we have a couple of trust issues right now because I believed in her.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is you know, because she has that last look at Jennifer Lawrence and you just know you're not going to see her again. Mm-hmm. And if she's been sort of your lifeline that entire 20 minutes, your heart just drops a little bit, much like Shannon Harris did in the study. So yeah, it's such an odd movie, especially like I said, reading other people's responses, especially the people that are just like, this movie made sweet, tender love to me and I was barren and now have triplets because of this movie.
Oh, someone actually said that? That's
the feeling you get when you read these reviews is just like, this was the gentlest lover I ever had.
We have this thing in society where people like liking things and I am not one of those people. So if I see something and I don't enjoy it, I'm going to say I didn't enjoy it as opposed to letting other people spend money on it and then pretend that we all like it together. I don't understand that form of gatekeeping. This is how bad movies keep getting made. Like,
yeah, where we don't acknowledge that this was not good. Let's not do this again.
Yeah, because there's a huge difference between a bad movie and something that's just not for me. Lots of movies are not for me, and that's fine. Like, I can't knock them for not being what I want to do. I don't do rom-coms. That doesn't mean some of them aren't good. It just means I'm the wrong audience. This is a bad movie. This isn't not for me. this could be fixed. This is someone who was given an opportunity to make this, and he decided to make this, and he got friends to help him make it, and now it's out there. I can't spin this to be like, this might be a good movie for so-and-so, unless so-and-so is researching bad movies. I have nothing.
Yeah, I feel like I got a little bit more out of it. Actually, that's a lie. I think I was able to enjoy it more the second time because I knew what I was getting into, but my responses shockingly were the same. Like what I really enjoyed previously, Michelle Pfeiffer, I loved even more, and the things that I found fault with or really didn't enjoy, Javier Bardem, I actively disliked this time. It was like this line that was sort of finger drawn in the sand was now like a hard line for me this watch.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Jerry. Because this the fourth time around, I really sat there for. I was there for Michelle Pfeiffer this time. It really just leaned in on her and adored it. Great. She's so good in this. And then I wonder if maybe I was trying to justify Jennifer and Javier's performances. I'm not sure because I think their performances were directed in such a way that they do come off as pretty stupid and awful individuals. I think they were directed that way. I think Jennifer was told to be as much of a pushover as possible, and Javier is supposed to be as bored and indifferent to this woman as possible. I think they were directed that way.
I read somewhere, and I wish I'd held on to that because I read a lot of things while figuring out what the hell this was. Sure. But I read somewhere that they rehearsed for like 2-3 months.
Yeah.
And J-Law did not bring the character we see on screen to those rehearsals. She waited till they were on set. And so the director was like, I didn't get to meet that character until we were on set. And I was like, but like, she's very robotic and wooden. So I would think you would have a conversation with her to be like, hey, this is not what we were doing in the rehearsal. could you do something different perhaps? Because from the top, I was like, why is she? We have a lot of different feelings towards Jennifer Lawrence, just as a society, as a people, we do. She's earned a lot of them. But like, we've seen her be able to perform. We've seen her earn some of these awards and nominations that she's gotten. And so I always respected her on that level, even if I didn't like the film or if the film wasn't for me or the filmmaker did weird stuff. This performance was very one note. It's very, I am thinking of my grocery list and when I get to go home, and this is all I'm going to give. There will be no nuance here.
I don't know. I somewhat feel that she was left out to dry, because I feel like on the page especially, hers is the character that is not human. She's just written as sort of these plot points and thoughts that are happening to her, and it's all about how she responds, which is why it's repetitive and dull for me, because bad shit just keeps happening to her, and she's either crying or screaming or, better yet, saying hey. So I think in that instance, she wasn't given a lot to work with, because I agree with Sheree. We've seen Jennifer Lawrence do good things, and I do think that she is talented. However, I do not think she is talented enough to both carry a movie and build something out of nothing. And she's asked to do both in this case. And I think she's not able to actually achieve that.
Yeah, because like this was not the script. It wasn't. It felt like a bunch of loose ideas in a trench coat. And I don't know if perhaps more time with that, or if an honest pair of eyes on that could have helped the writer out a little bit, especially for what he's wanting her to mean in this movie. I feel like that needed to be a conversation with an actual woman, perhaps, because that might be part of the issue, is that he's like, well, this is my idea of Mother Earth or whatever I'm making here. I still am not 100% sure what he's subscribing to, and I watched this and I'm not sure. But he's like, this is my idea, and this is my idea of how that would transform into the body of this tiny blonde woman who's blue-eyed. And how she would behave in these situations when Dodd, the poet, or whatever he's subscribing to, is telling her, these people are coming to our house. These people are doing this. And so it is very, she's so passive that like, if I almost forget about her, even though we're with her the whole time. We are with her the whole time. And I'm like, are you really in this scene? Are you here?
It's easy to do, because Aronofsky films her over her shoulder almost.
Yes.
So, especially when we get to the Chaos Reign section, we are following over her shoulder through a lot of traveling through the house. I think you probably have a point there, Sheree, where you kind of forget, because we don't see her for a lot of, we are her eyes going through this house. And when we do see her, she, like Jerry says, she's either crying, yelling at these people, or falling down. So yeah, it's a really odd way to experience this movie through a very, very passive character. And yeah, I don't know what he's subscribing to in this.
And I also, because of how passive she is, we're in her, like you said, we're over her shoulder. We're staring at her braid in the back of her head the whole movie. Yeah. And so like she becomes wallpaper. And so I'm just like, if this is her story, I don't understand how, and I don't understand what she's trying to really get, other than for someone to say something nice to her, which is, that's not a full length movie. That's an Edward Albee play we didn't need to have filmed. I'm concerned.
And I prefer it when it's the Albee play. Yeah. Like I prefer it when Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer walk in, because there's suddenly this dynamism there, and there's something just really electric that they bring to the table. And then the Cain and Abel, the brothers, is where the train starts going off the rails for me, but it's after the wake, when it's back to being just the two of them, that my brain completely checks out. I am so bored with the two of them. And then the next quote unquote exciting thing that happens is what I assume is significant of, you know, centuries of plague and warfare and atrocities done to Mother Earth in the span of 15 minutes. And you've already lost me, and that doesn't get me back. And that's why I don't enjoy this ride, is because what is keeping me attached, which is sort of this intimate, really kind of fucked up horror movie chamber opera at the top, disappears entirely at a certain point. And I'm just like, I'm not on board anymore, guys.
Yeah.
I agree. Everything that happens for that whole it's escalating, and I'm gonna like really give you my thesis in case you missed it, which we hadn't, we just didn't care. But everything that happens in that chunk was just like, we're doing this because we need to shock people. And so like, let's eat the baby. And I'm like, okay. And then they're like, let's snatch J-Law's top off. And I'm like, we didn't need to, but whatever. Let's blow Christian Wig up. We didn't need to, but whatever. What? Yeah. Let's have her execute people before we blow her up. And I'm like, but like you're, when you do things just to shock people, you don't really like shock them because they're just like, are these just images? What is your plot? What is your theme? I thought you were trying to say something and now you're just like trying to be in my face in case I missed it.
Yeah, it does feel just like it's just really shocking imagery. It doesn't really have much to say.
It's because it's 3-second snapshots of what Sheree is saying, just J-Law walking around like the Epcot of world problems.
Oh my God.
It's one of those things. He is certainly making his point, but I keep going back. This is such a simple critique that we hear on Drag Race all the time. So, and why would we not have a Drag Race reference in this episode? But it's very Michelle Visage, and it's just like, I know that you know the story you were telling, but I didn't get the story you were telling, or it didn't click with me. And I think that when we look at sort of reviews and Aronofsky's response to audience and critical reviews, he felt that he needed to come out very quickly to explain what this movie was about, whether he wanted to or not. And so I think that that is just sort of a problem in the storytelling of it, is that you told this story, it was clearly personal for you, and that's wonderful that you got this out of your system, but it may not have been told correctly for everyone to understand and appreciate it.
I think, Sheree, you said it was who said it was a chamber opera, that first kind of 50 minutes? Yeah, when Ed Harris and Michelle descend upon this kind of isolated house, which we've totally skipped over like a plot. I mean, I feel like, do we need to give any type of plot synopsis of this, or?
You know, 30 minutes in, I think that's the right point. Sheree, would you like to give us a quick synopsis of Mother?
Thank you. A woman tries to rebuild a house as she works too hard for the approval of her husband as he invites everyone and their mother into this shoddy house. It soon becomes clear that this weird situation is a metaphor that will escalate and cave in on itself before the house does the same.
Ooh.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I've studied.
And yeah, so Ed Harris and Michelle are those first visitors to the house. They are, to my mind, Adam and Eve in this situation.
Yeah.
And that's the highlight of the whole movie, is this very... because they bring a sense, a little bit of danger almost, in just how reckless and how inconsiderate they are. Especially danger to, I guess, the house and to Jennifer Lawrence's world almost. The house is her world. She is connected to this house. And this is, her heart is inside the house. If you believe that the little gem that Javier Bardem places in a little stand at the beginning of the film, and the house evolves around this gem, I believe that is her heart. And so, yeah, these are intruders upon her earth, her home. So every slight, my favorite thing that Michelle does is when she makes her little spiked lemonade and she clinks the glasses in a cheers and a lemonade falls on the floor. And Jennifer clearly clocks the fact now there's a mess that she needs to clean up. Each mess on top of the other just feels so, you feel the discomfort. You feel, it does feel a little bit like his own, Aronofsky's own kind of horror movie, because he's playing off of, the classic intruder. Someone is in your space, you don't feel safe. And the shots of, discarded things, it does feel like he's building tension that way, with them just fully encroaching on their space. And I really like that, when you just want these people to leave so badly and you just feel that something's going to happen when they're here.
My question on that front is, what what movie do we get when he just sticks to that segment of Genesis? Mm-hmm. And having that sort of be the, I think we could still get the time as a closed loop with mm-hmm. with that, if everything fell apart with the garden, with the diamond shattering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than going all the way through time immemorial, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we just had those four and lengthened that and just had sort of the Garden of Eden parable be the movie.
Because it's all there. Because again, when Ed shows up, he's got that giant hole in his back. And I'm like, what's that about? And then Michelle Pfeiffer appears and she has no name. And their sons show up. You're like, are they Adam and Eve? Are we doing a Bible story here? I was homeschooled. I know what this shit is. And and we could have looped it back around and it would have been fine. I feel like everything starting with that murder of the son, it just sort of is like, okay, now let's just like devolve because I don't know what we're doing anymore. And it becomes a different movie that's not savable as opposed to a movie that could possibly be saved or at least had fun with.
Well, because mm-hmm. they invest so much in that part of the movie in terms of like the time that's given to the other sort of biblical allegories, it's a pretty decisive percentage in favor of that one, because you know you have the frog and the blood going down the wall for the plagues, you have the sink coming undone for the flood, and they're all mm-hmm. just 2 second little things that we haven't really invested in, because I don't know about y'all, I don't personally invest much in Jennifer Lawrence shrieking about an unbraced sink, so
I do.
But is your sink braced now?
Go check, Michael.
Okay, let me.
But yeah, I love Michelle Pfeiffer's performance in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, my feelings aside, and I said this in 2017 before I had like fully cemented like all of my eternal Michelle Pfeiffer love. So I try to say this with as unbiased an opinion as I possibly can at this point. She is incredible in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I had to give this movie an award, it would be for something Michelle Pfeiffer did. She understood as much of the assignment as anybody could. She came in with a character and costume, also got that character with her and her neon underwear that she could still wear. She's Michelle fucking Pfeiffer. And yes. She was having a good time. Her and Ed Harris were like, let's have a movie within this thing. And it was good to see them work together. I don't think I've seen them in anything together before. Because at first I was like, is he her husband? Because Michelle Pfeiffer is like Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, she's clearly older than me, but looks better than me. And I've made peace with that as a small child until now and still. And Ed Harris looks like a normal person. Like, and that's not a bad thing, but I'm just like, give Michelle Pfeiffer like this husband running around with J-Law up here. Like, let's let her have fun. But then you see them work together and you're like, oh, these are the actors who can navigate some of this better and they're gonna give us a show. And they take them away. And you're like, well, why am I still here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the whole thing. I read an interview with Aronofsky where he said he was so impressed with Michelle's performance because literally like the only thing he gave her besides the script was the word mischievous. And when you read that, you realize, oh, he probably gave Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem one word too, and they didn't know what to do with it. But Michelle Pfeiffer heard mischievous and said, I can fucking do this.
And she did. When you said that, I was like, I get everything, because she was that person who's like, I'm gonna make messes. I'm gonna go up here where you tell me not to go. I'm not gonna apologize. You should be cool about what I just did. I'm having a party. I am the party. And so like, that makes sense. And that is something you could give someone like Michelle Pfeiffer and you can't give to some other people in this movie.
I loved it. Just the passive aggression in her performance from, I clocked this time. I don't think I clocked this on my 5 bajillion times I've seen this. Back to like the lemonade scene when Michelle comes in offering her a glass. I think she says, it's my family recipe or something. Jennifer says, what is the lemons? And Michelle does not respond to the joke. I think she barely gives Jennifer a glance. And the glance that she barely gives enough to turn me to stone. So... and she just tucks up her little legs and is so delicious. She's a glass of spiked lemonade in this movie.
Yeah.
That's what she is.
I would watch her with this character in anything else. Just mm-hmm. insert this character, Michelle Pfeiffer playing it, into anything else, and it will be a damn good time.
Mm-hmm.
It felt so close to what she's giving us in White Oleander. Like, this just felt mm-hmm. so deeply psychological, and she's just having so much fun pushing buttons.
Mm-hmm.
That she just loves running around and throwing wet laundry on the floor and asking, now why don't you have kids, with this smile on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And it is exactly the word you use, Michael. It is just a delicious, electric performance, and she commands this movie like nobody else does. And I think that's why the energy just sort of drops when she leaves, is because for some reason she has attuned herself to what this movie is trying to deliver. And when she is on screen, you are riveted to what she is doing.
Yes, she is the movie, which is another reason there's so much confusion, because it's just like, the only person that was carrying it and seemed to understand whatever this is supposed to be is longer with us. And so when you pull that thread, that jacket falls to shit. And that's what happened here.
Yeah. Then they're just such a couple of brats when her and Ed Harris, which I just loved, because once they get really comfy in the house, and once she just leaves her laundry in the laundry room, she can take care of that for me. You know, once they break the heart, they're like a couple of spurned kids, and then they're just a couple of finicky little brats who don't want to leave, and then smoking, making messes, fucking in the house.
The whole breaking of the heart and everything that happens right up until the sons arrive is a moment where I was just like, notes, 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 notes. Because, like, clearly this husband is not taking this broken heart well, which we don't fully grasp yet, but he's like crushing the glass into his hands and he's screaming at people. And Michelle Pfeiffer's pouting, like, we said we were sorry, get over it. And then, like, her and Ed run into the room so they can have sex, and J-Law is like, what is happening in my house for the ninth time this minute? Mm-hmm. And Michelle's like, can you give us a moment in her bra, and slams the door like she owns this bitch. And then she comes back and her husband's boarding up the office instead of just like being like, hey, let's remove the situation. And I'm like, all of this just went from a 10 to a 20. Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 10, and I don't know what we're gonna do next.
Yeah.
That was a chaotic segment that I would pull away from this movie. If I were to run into this burning house, I would pull that segment out if it had to be something consecutively and not just Michelle Pfeiffer and Ed Harris. Mm-hmm. I would pull that chunk out and be like, let us play with this, just this.
The other little full circle moment I loved of Michelle is the way she talks about J-Lo's clothing. Like, her holding up the granny panties in the laundry room, she's just like, you're going to have to do better than this. Yeah. And then it comes full circle in her last scene at the wake, because she's going on this just like Greek tragedy monologue, and then ends it by giving Jennifer an up down and just goes, can't you just put on something decent, and flounces off. And I'm just like, she is a queen. She is holding court in this movie, and it is beautiful.
I just love that the library is always open, even at her son's funeral, because reading is fundamental.
Oh yeah, Jennifer goes up to her at the wake and says, I'm so sorry. And Michelle just walks off.
You really can't understand, can you? You don't have children.
Which is such a mom move. This is something that you so twist it at a time where, like, you literally cannot clap back and win. So you're just like, I'll remember this, Judith. And you have to go your separate ways.
I did. It was interesting, the things you pick up on after you know all the sort of biblical allegories, like, that you know from the second she gets there that she's an Eve mm-hmm. character.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started noticing more and more that she is constantly touching things that she shouldn't from the get-go. Like, the first thing she does is grab a hot pan that she just saw Jennifer Lawrence burn her hand on. And so she's always going around the house, like throwing the dust cover off the couch and leaving the lemons in the kitchen. She's just always touching things she's not supposed to. And that was a fun little tick that I definitely picked up on more this time around.
That's her taking the word mischievous and running with it, to my mind.
Yes, that's it.
And it made me so mad with this character that Jennifer is supposed to play, because she is constantly apologizing, taking on blame for things that are not her fault, which in a way is that kind of earth, could we dig into that and be like, yeah, I guess this is how we treat earth. We make earth take the blame for our mistakes.
The more I think about this metaphor and how he attached it to her and the way he's written that character, who may or may not have an actual name, the more I think about it, the more I want to unpack his relationship possibly with his own mother. Was she a stay-at-home mom? Did he feel that she wasn't respected as a person because of it? Really? Does he know a stay-at-home mom? And he's just like, how dare you? I'd like to know more, because it feels like he's attached to this metaphor of this person who does not get respect, and is very demure and can't have agency. And that's just the way it is. And it's constantly being put upon. And so I think that this was a purposeful thing, because there's many ways of creating a femme character. It doesn't have to be someone who's so into housekeeping that she is redoing a complete house by herself with a husband who does not care in his study. and is going out of her way to bend over backwards and just sort of like have someone say something nice to her. And so I need to unpack that with him. I don't know if he's unpacking that in therapy, or if he's unpacking that with friends, or if he's just drinking through it, but I think that there is something specifically there, and that's part of why this is the way it is, if that makes sense.
I think there seems to be a lot of reliance on the fact that Earth can't talk back, which I know sounds so simplistic, but like, she has very few breaking points in this movie, especially when it comes to him.
Yeah.
And so it feels like the responses are to sort of the natural disasters, the death, the sink, the flood, what have you, war. It's all these sort of symbolic things rather than this person that she should be screaming at. And so I wish that there had been a little more balance, and maybe a little, again, trying to do a little bit more to make this character more human, rather than just being a symbol of someone who literally cannot fight back. It's not as interesting as you would want it to be.
It's not. And it makes me really frustrated with that character, because we have had plenty of women on film who don't have agency and can't speak above a whisper and are always just sort of there at the beck and call, waiting to see what the husband wants. And again, I get that this is this person's religious metaphor for the environment, but still, I wonder what would have happened had he written whoever Jennifer Lawrence has played, name or nameless, had he written them as a man. I wonder if he would have given them some backbone, some agency at times then, just so we have somebody that we're sort of pulling for a little bit. Cause right now it's just like, oh, she's here, so we're in the house. That's her only function.
I also know that when they were filming this, Jennifer and her director, Darren Aronofsky, were in a relationship. I don't know if they were dating or if they began dating post filming this, but I was thinking about that today, how if he's trying to say something about an artist and their muse, because I think she, if we're looking at on that level, Javier Bardem is the poet and she is his muse, his reason for being able to create, and how the muse gets discarded once there becomes adoration, idolatry. She gets the back seat. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of, that's a little bit fucked up if you think about it. this isn't really great. And then the fact that you are technically maybe dating your muse, having that relationship be copied in real life. Okay, interesting. I know that relationship didn't last very long between the two of them. But I was thinking about, I knew that I had picked up on that that metaphor of the artist and the muse. That was one of the first things I picked up on when I first saw this. And I was like, oh, wait, but they dated. So art imitating life, I don't, good God, girl, get out. Like, So that's there, that there's that there too, that it's, we're watching this stupid man just throw away any connection to real life, be it a partner and a child, for the sake of idolatry and adoration and love from other people.
Yeah, like I don't like being stuck in circles. I think it's one of the issues I have with this movie, is that it was the same circle over and over, but with different factors. literally, it's just like, let's add a baby into it now. Of course I'm listening to you. I threw a baby out to the people. Go find it. Oh, the baby's dead. Of course I care, but I don't. I guess we're going to throw you out to the people. And it's just like, well, can we do something different? And I get that maybe these circles are part of what he wants on purpose, and it's not just him fucking with me. Maybe, I don't know. But it just, it felt like, because we kept getting stuck in this circle for 2 hours and 1 minute, we could have just like made this a short and left it alone. And then I'd be less bitter, and then maybe I could find more of the light in the situation, as opposed to being like, this was 2 hours and 1 minute for what?
I, just speaking on the time thing, I had forgotten that there is still 20 minutes in that movie after she has the baby. And there was a part of my brain that was just like, I've seen this before. I don't remember there being 20 minutes after she has this baby. Yeah, there is. there are indeed 20 minutes.
I feel like that 20 minutes is why people are like, maybe it's a horror movie, because there's just so much like blood and mess and like the ripping of the sweater. And like, cause like once you find like a half eaten baby, you're like, okay, well clearly we're doing something different now.
we're in a different world right now. Yeah.
And I feel like, again, this feels like this is two movies, and I keep seeing this happen, where you have like this movie up top about this couple that appears and the weird shenanigans happening there. And then you have this movie that happens after that couple leaves because the son is dead, where it's just chaos for chaos's sake. And so you have this thing that started out as possibly going to do something, and now you're just like, let's shock the people. Let's just have chaos. Let's see how far I can go before somebody says you can't do this on film. And I'm just like, but like they don't go together, even if you do try to put a little bow on it at the end by him ripping her heart out and starting it over. That's just another longer circle of two different movies that I don't want to imagine happening. What? Yeah. Is this a threat? So I took it when he put the heart back in there. I was like, don't do it again.
And I think that comes back to the problem of how you respond to Lawrence and Bardem, because they're the connective tissue of those two parts. So if you were not on board with their characters or their performances, there's nothing to tie them together for you. But because like I said, that sort of calm before the storm, it's hard to get through and pay attention if you have not invested in these characters, because it's a good 15-20 minutes of just them sort of coming back to stasis. And again, by that point, I was warmer toward Jennifer Lawrence this watch, but I wrote down about 15 minutes in that I can never quite understand for this one if Javier Bardem's character is just that underdeveloped, or if I think he is actively terrible in this movie. Maybe both. But he is, in both watches for me, he has been the biggest sticking point of, I do not like this performance. I think it is a bad performance.
And his character could be such a conversation had it been handled differently, because we have a lot of artists who are male who are getting away with murder. and they treat their partners like shit. And you have people who are like, separate the art from the artist. So that could be a conversation, but I don't think that this creator is in on that conversation. Perhaps this creator is seeing himself in it and was like, well, that's how this person is, as opposed to, what am I missing? I'm not letting people in on this. If the movie feels like a giant in-joke that's not funny, and we all took a ride and we're like, but could you explain it to us now that we've seen it? And he's like, you should just get it. It's the joke. It's so funny. It's like, no, it's not. that's how I feel. It's like watching a comedian bomb, but feel bad for them, because you see that they're getting this joke in their eyes, but nobody else is getting this joke because it's something that them and their friends have been saying at home. And so you're like, but I don't understand how your dishwasher functions. So I need you to give me something.
I won't lie, I did. I sent Michael a GIF during the movie, because I had forgotten that she falls asleep and Javier Bardem basically Rafiki's that baby into the crowd. And that's all I thought. The second her eyes closed, I was just like, oh, that's right. He Pride Rocks that baby.
Yeah.
Again, it's this damn circle we're stuck in. And the circles could have been cool. It could have been a circle of abuse because, like, he is gaslighting her and he is mistreating her. But again, we are so stuck on the metaphor that we think is important. And we think that we're executing, that we don't catch all these side conversations we could be having that might help, like, fix some of these problems and fill some of these plot holes and character issues, because we're like, no, Mother Earth, let's get to the war and the famine and the bloody baby and blowing up Kristen Wiig. Let's bypass all this other stuff that I'm accidentally opening doors to. And it's probably a better conversation to be had for what I've put here. It feels very much like a first draft.
And I had absolutely forgotten about that midway point, because in my head, my brain had rewritten this movie that the Wiig morphs in to this other chaos. So I had completely forgotten about that midsection. But I mean, going back to what you said, Sheree, reading about Aronofsky's creation of this, he, from all accounts, very happily says that he churned this script out in 5 days. And that's the thing, is he kind of, reading some of the interviews, it sounds like he considers that an achievement. And in my head, I'm just like, maybe we could have gone with 7 days?
And you then know, keep the metaphor going. Keep the metaphor going.
I really do wonder how much he aligns to Javier's character, and maybe that's why he doesn't see the issues with that character.
I think he probably would align himself with Javier's character.
Agreed.
It just seems like that's the case here, that's who he aligns himself with. I think even the fact that Javier's character turns out this, I guess, the book of Genesis for you, I guess he turns out the Bible. He writes the Bible in a day. I don't know. Maybe he's saying about that, you know, look at what I have created in this short span of time and look at how I am adored. Is that what he's trying to say about maybe this movie himself? He created this movie so quickly. Look at my accomplishment. Look how adored I am by what I've created so fast. I think it probably aligns. Yeah, I think so.
Another thing for me is, have y'all seen movies before where something really, really big happens and then you have this cameo appearance that takes you out completely? Because that's Kristen Wiig for me here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And especially because I remember this distinctly from the theater viewing again, is you have this really large chaos thing happening. And then all of a sudden you see Kristen Wiig appear. And at that point in time, you were very triggered to what you expect from Kristen Wiig.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been nowhere in this movie for you to prep for her. No. She just kind of appears and you're like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I had this. Did either of you see Kathryn Bigelow, Detroit?
I haven't yet.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, don't do it. But there was a similar moment for that where this, I can't even remember exactly what this big moment was, but there was some big dramatic moment. And then this hard cut to the next scene where fucking John Krasinski was playing a lawyer. And I was like, why is Jim Halpert here? No, go away, Jim Halpert. We don't need you here.
Yeah.
And that is the same response I get with Kristen Wiig in this movie.
My mental note, because again, I saw this for the first time this week, was that genre has not been good to Miss Wiig, because Wonder Woman 1984 did her all the disservices, and now Mother is a new example of why she might not want to talk to us anymore. And that would be her right, to be like, I'm done. I get burned every time I try.
And it's one thing for her to show up for 2 seconds in a comedy. That's very different than showing up at the 90-minute mark of a 2-hour movie for no reason. Yeah. It's very jarring.
Literally anybody else, you can't, because again, like, unfortunately, Kristen Wiig is a bigger star in my world. I mean, some people will argue, but she's a bigger star for me than Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah. People might want to argue, I don't care. But like, and so to have somebody who's a name come in like towards the end of your movie for all of 2 scenes, that's very jarring. And I was like, good sir, what are you, are we going to have another 2 hours of this movie? Because like, you can't just be like, well, now that Christian's here, let's wrap this up, because that feels wrong. But he did it. He was like, we're going to see her fight her way to the table. We're going to see her execute some people, and we're going to blow her up, and we're going to send her home. And I'm like, but why did you waste her time?
Yeah, I think you could have easily gotten somebody without a name or that kind of recognition that we know Kristen from. You could have just had somebody else do that. And it could have been just as... It could have just to fill the assigned role, and it would have been fine. I think it would have taken you out.
It's very different watching this now and seeing like Stevie from Schitt's Creek show up, or I'm pretty sure Richard Splett from Veep being very creepy toward Jennifer Lawrence for all of 5 seconds at the wake, where you're just like, oh, holy shit, I didn't recognize them back in 2017.
Yeah.
We knew exactly who Kristen Wiig was in 2017.
So many choices were made, and I don't understand. I will be haunted by trying to understand for the rest of my life.
It's the jigsaw puzzle that you can't quite find the last three pieces of.
Yeah. No, like the cat ate half this puzzle and he still put it up because he could.
I think that's why I would keep rewatching it, because I was like, well, maybe this time I'll find those last three pieces. Maybe it will finally click into place for me. And I think now I have a pretty good understanding of what it's trying to say, but then there's still some moments. Well, it's like you think you found the last three pieces. Oh, wait, there's still three more missing. That's what it kind of feels like, where I think I've got it, but oh, wait, there's this part over here that I'm still not really sure about. But it's not like it's not a fun puzzle.
No.
This is the 1,000 pieces of just different shades of white puzzle.
Yes.
Exactly. Yep.
It's the one your Nana gave you and you didn't ask her to, and then she stared at you, so you opened it. I don't understand. I can't stress enough how I don't understand how we got to some of these choices, how this movie got made, how we skipped over these important conversations. This movie almost happened or could have happened or could have had, and instead went for this metaphor that could have been a commercial.
I think you touched on initially, you said it could have been a short film, Sheree. I think this would have maybe been more effective if you just kept that first hour as a short film. I think that could have been just as effective and would have done the job. And I think that's where this really could have maybe just stayed, but just a short film format.
But then I wouldn't have the final puzzle piece for me this watch, which was that Jennifer Lawrence is the Giving Tree.
Yes. Let that blow your mind, Sheree, because Jerry texted that to me and he was like, oh, Jennifer Lawrence is the Giving Tree. And I really dropped my phone.
Okay, wait.
It was that final scene when she's, you know, all burnt to a crisp and she just goes, take it. And I'm just like, oh, holy shit. Jennifer Lawrence has been the Giving Tree this entire time.
So the metaphor I was trying to assume he was going for is, okay.
Throw out the Bible. It's a Shel Silverstein book.
It really is. It's so many short plays that should have stayed short plays. and he stitched them together like a quilt of mayhem and said, hey, Michelle, you want to come over? And she's like, what are you doing over there? And he's like, do you want to come over? Is what I asked you. I didn't tell you, I'd give you details. And she's like, I guess, friend. And now we're all here.
I have never been happier than being told a movie is a quilt of mayhem. I've never heard it. I want to hear it forevermore.
Yep.
Yeah, this movie is my muse.
there are coats of many colors. There are quilts of mayhem.
Are we ready to pivot to some awards talk? Are there any additional mother exclamation point movie thoughts we have before we move on to awards?
I wrote so many fucking notes about this movie. I thought...
2 pages worth.
Dissertation level notes about this damn movie, when all along it's just the Giving Tree.
It was the Jennifer Lawrence we met the whole way. It was not more, not less. It explains why her performance was so wooden, though. Now that makes sense.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
I hate everything.
Yay, puns. Okay.
This is good. I'm just imagining Raja O'Hara and her tree get up watching this movie.
He's like, I was here the whole time.
or it's what was her name from last season? who was the tree who couldn't do that. We were all rooting for you.
Oh
Kimora
baby.
Hall. Yes. Kimora yes. Hall.
Where she wore,
yeah, where she wore the titties under the green yeah. screen suit and she couldn't figure out how to say, we were all rooting for you.
So to a lot of people's shock, this got 0 Oscar nominations.
What?
Lies.
None.
I'm for best script.
Not even for best metaphor.
Special citation for best metaphor, mother.
He should have gotten the Gene Herschel Humanitarian Award for all he's trying to say about the earth.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing. Okay, no, I get
no
it.
Oscars. Which is just surprising to me because of Aronofsky's streak at that point, like The Wrestler into the sort of awards juggernaut that was Black Swan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know he had Noah between Black Swan and this, which, okay.
I saw that.
I did not, but I'm happy you did.
Yeah, I saw it.
I did not, but then I have questions. Like, was this just like his, like, I've refound religion phase? Like,
I guess so, since he's had Noah and the Ark and now this one, so maybe.
What if there's a third one and that's going to make it all make sense? It's going to pull the whole room together. It's like that missing rug.
Now, the one awards it did get were some Razzie nominations, which yeah. is what I really want to talk to y'all about and be like, I'll admit, I am very much one of the hashtag fuck the Razzies people because their choices, especially toward women, are questionable at best.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I believe it was only 3, if I'm not mistaken. It was worst director for Aronofsky, worst actress for Lawrence, and worst supporting actor for Javier Bardem. Luckily, they did not dare go near Michelle Pfeiffer because I would have flown to wherever they stay in their hovel and would have read them the riot act for that. But the weird thing for me is they went so hardcore, like giving Aronofsky worst director, but didn't nominate this for worst movie. It felt like they were very, I don't even know what adjective to use in this instance, but it seemed like they knew where they wanted to throw their punches.
They wanted to be petty.
Yeah, because the only, I'm not going to lie, I won't defend Javier Bardem. I hated his performance. And it was paired with his performance in a Pirates movie. So, you know, Javier Bardem can stay there. I don't think that this was a badly directed movie, nor do I think that Jennifer Lawrence was of five, the worst actresses of the year in this movie.
Yeah.
So those are the two where I'm like, you know, as much as I question the creation of the storytelling of this movie, I do find the direction to at least be interesting. And at least, again, that part I give credit because he knows what story he's telling. Even if it doesn't mm-hmm. appeal to me, the direction part of it, fine. I will give you that. So those yeah. are the two where I'm like, Razzies, back the fuck up. Please, like Jennifer Lawrence lost worst actress to fucking Tyler Perry in a Madea movie, which.
Let's just go ahead and give him all the Razzies and just go ahead and shut it down.
Just an annual Tyler Perry Razzie. Yeah. Award.
Change the name to the Tyler Perrys.
It does feel like they were just being very petty.
And it got a lot of backlash for them, especially the Lawrence nomination seemed mm-hmm. to be a real sticking point for people that they thought that was really punching down on her.
She's divisive because, again, we've seen her be able to do the work, even if sometimes as a person she should say less, which is a lot of young Hollywood. Yeah, but I have a hard time giving her a Razzie in general, even though I hated this performance. Like, I was like, what are you doing? Do you not want to be here? You could always leave. That's an option. But now I know that they were dating. And I'm like, oh, well, you know what you did. So I don't know if I would say this is her worst performance. And I feel like the worst should definitely be the one considered for a Razzies. But I don't think this was her worst, even though I did not enjoy it. And I had a lot to say about it.
Yeah, I don't think she's... What were the other nominees? Can you see the nominees in that category that year? I don't take really much any stock in them, so it's like...
I was about to say, I think if I'm remembering correctly from who she's... Yeah, I mean, she is up there. So Tyler Perry from Boo 2! ! A Madea Halloween was the winner. And then we have Jennifer Lawrence and Mother, Katherine Heigl in Unforgettable, which, since I haven't heard of it, clearly was. Dakota Johnson in 50 Shades Darker, and Emma Watson in The Circle.
She was never going to win this Razzie anyways, because that's some steep competition.
No. And I think that the Razzies got what they wanted without her there by, you know, having Emma Watson, especially in a very unpopular movie that they could nominate her for. And of course, they're going to nominate Dakota Johnson, regardless of her quality, for a 50 Shades movie. That goes without saying.
It's just them being able to make fun of whatever they can. And it's not.
Yeah, they saw a divisive Jennifer Lawrence performance kind of as her star was just starting to burn out and decided to take advantage of it.
What about Michelle, though?
Happier topic. There was definitely some grassroots support, again, because this was sort of her big return, this and Orient Express, but it seemed to be this performance people were really gathering around to try and get some grassroots support for a supporting actress nomination. So she got, I know she was fifth place for the IndieWire Critics Awards. She was nominated for the Dorian Awards, which are the LGBTQ cinema focused nomination group, although it doesn't have to be an LGBTQ focused movie for them to nominate it. That's just sort of the alliance they're part of. And they actually had a badass lineup for supporting actress that year. So they had Michelle nominated. Their winner was Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird. Oscar nominees and one of the winners, Allison Janney for I, Tonya, and Mary J. Blige for Mudbound. And then their fifth one was Tiffany Haddish for Girls Trip, which I see that lineup and I go, I like you. I like this lineup.
Like, I like where we're going with this one. I like how this feels.
I love me some Leslie Manville in Phantom Thread. Like, that surprise Oscar nomination made me very happy because I think she's amazing in that movie. But that Dorian supporting lineup is really solid for that year. Some very exciting choices.
The gays know. The gays have their finger on the pulse of cinema. And whenever I see, especially in years since, when I've looked at their nominees, they know what's up. They know what's good. Was there anybody in the kind of supporting actress lineup that you would shift around to make room for Michelle?
I would have to think long and hard about it because they do have the supporting actresses that year. So we had winner Allison Janney, the ones we've already talked about, Laurie Metcalf, Mary J. Blige, and Leslie Manville. And then the fifth was another one that sort of showed up everywhere, which was Octavia Spencer for Shape of Water. It's difficult for me because I think that those are all five performances that are very solid and all and are championed in a lot of corners by certain people who have their preferences. Me personally, I wasn't as big with Allison Janney and I, Tonya, as other people were. And that comes as someone who adores Allison Janney in most everything. And I also, I was a little surprised by Octavia Spencer's nomination just for that performance. She's very good, but it doesn't compare to The Help or even her Hidden Figures nomination, in my opinion. Definitely would have kept Metcalf and Manville and probably Blige as well, but I think Michelle could have slipped in over the other two for me. Just because I truly am so wowed by her performance here. And I do think if you saw the movie, she's who you leave remembering. What did y'all think in terms of nominating her?
Yes. Yes. Like, yeah, the only person who deserves a nomination is Michelle and whoever costumed Michelle. Like, specifically for Michelle's costumes. And, like, just, I feel like a lot of times movies, they look at an actor's age on paper and it's like, this is what they should wear, as opposed to who this actor is. Because again, like I've been saying, I've known since I was a little girl, Michelle Pfeiffer will always look younger than me. And that is fine. I'm happy for her as her friend. But like, a lot of people are just like, well, she was born in this decade, so therefore give her these uncomfortable things. And they were like, no, no, she's mischief. She's having fun. Give her fun things. And I never for once second was like, Michelle's character would never wear that. Michelle's character would never do that, because Michelle was living her most deliciously evil life here. And just even like the outerwear, because like that's also a big part of this, is that she never for once looked like she belonged in this house, in this boring world where women become wallpaper. She was always like, I am an event. Hello.
I think I maybe go along your lines, Jerry, and maybe swap out Alice and Janney or Octavia for a Michelle slot, because I agree, I was really more in the Laurie Metcalf camp for the Oscar that year. So yeah, I think I would like to slip her in there. But I wonder, just because the movie was so divisive, and I think the opinion of the movie came ahead of the majority of people seeing it. I think the F Cinema Score really labeled it as something to be skipped altogether instead of checked out. That way you could maybe see the little merits the film has, like Michelle. You know, I think if more people had seen it, instead of let the response maybe scare them away, maybe there could have been more.
Especially since I, and this goes for me as well, I think I only learned within the past year and a half, that an F Cinema Score does not necessarily mean that it is a terrible movie, that cinema scores get rated by audience expectation. So if you get an F Cinema Score, they classify that as a movie that goes out of its way to artfully alienate or confuse audiences, is an F Cinema Score, rather than just being like, this is a terrible movie. So I find that distinction very interesting, because there are certainly articles that, as you said, attribute sort of the audience failure for this movie on the F Cinema Score. And I wonder if that's people saying, oh, I shouldn't see this movie because it's bad, because it's rated an F, when that isn't necessarily what it means.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that this is a piece of crap. And again, that's relative. But it's just, I think it does fit that bill. It kind of does go out of its way to really alienate and confuse its audience. It is worthy of that F. Especially for you with charades, that's being your first time. Did you hear about kind of the audience's reactions to this movie when it first came out?
I'm an avoider because I am a ruiner. So I'll sit down at the top of a movie and 5 minutes in, know what's happening.
Yeah.
And I hate that. So I purposely avoid all reviews, all conversations, any trailers until after I see it. So all I'll know going in is the cast that people have alluded to and the name. And I was like, I'm surprised the movie's been out so long and no one's ruined anything for me. Yeah. Which again, I thought that was a sign that it was really good. Nobody talked about it because people hate good things. I didn't understand it would be the inverse of that this time. But I'm happy nobody tried to ruin it, because it was, I figured out what could be figured out, and that's all I need to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seemed like you got a lot more of the allegory straight off on your first watch than I did.
It was still all over the place because I didn't connect the Giving Tree. I was like, is she Mother Earth? Is this God? And so I'm trying to piece all of that together, but I would have never got. Like, even if I would go back in, which I will never, I wouldn't have gotten that probably the second or third viewing.
Well, I don't think that was maybe Aronofsky's intention.
No, but that's
from the Downey dissertation.
That's the canon that makes it make sense, though. Yeah. Because, again, it was a wooden performance, and she kept giving and giving. And when she's burnt, she does sort of look tree-like. And so that makes this make sense, and it makes this journey worth some of the journey. Not all, but some of the journey.
So for our last two questions, we usually go toward, they usually go hand in hand. I don't know if they will for this one, the way we've been talking. How do we feel about Michelle's performance? Do we recommend this as a Michelle performance?
A shining light in a sea of darkness.
A shining light. Yes. Yeah.
She is the best pattern on the quilt of mayhem.
The only pattern I would wear. Yes.
Agreed, all around.
And then flip side, would we recommend this movie to people?
No, I really don't. It's kind of like, if you know, you know. I don't, it's, for anybody who's like, who has never seen it, or has no inkling of it, would never recommend it. But if someone has heard of it and asks me, maybe give them an honest answer about it. But if I was going to talk to my mom about what movies we should watch, oh, hell no, not Mother.
This is my Fight Club. I don't talk about it. I won't talk about it. I won't talk about it.
I really do go back to the roller coaster metaphor, because if I'm standing with a friend at Six Flags and he looks up at the Titan and is just like, should I ride that? I'd be like, bitch, figure it out on your own. You see how high that goes?
You want to get on the car. That's what you want to do, go.
Yeah. If you want to get on the car, get on the car and go up. Figure it out. But I would never tell them to not ride the highest roller coaster. But I'm also not going to like pull their safety belt for them. I'm just going to let them take the ride.
Much like this movie, we are, our metaphors today are our
peak,
are pretty incredible. Better than the metaphors in this movie, to be honest with you.
And we didn't need 5 days.
We did not. We did not. Kristen Wiig could still walk in though if she wanted to. I'd allow that because I have not met her.
I was looking at my notes. I have a question. I want to know what we think about this. This is a random little thing in this movie. Sorry to have to get us back into the mother. So in the beginning of the movie, Jennifer, whenever her equilibrium gets like, whenever she experiences her little vertigo moments or something, she drinks a little yellow liquid or like a little yellow powder that she puts into a glass of water. What do we think that is? Shrugga?
That's no a clue. Big shrug emoji for me, because I was thinking the same thing. I was, because it doesn't ever seem to help her. In fact, it kind of makes her go toward the wall and see the heart shriveling up. So I was just like, is this just like the Band-Aid we put on the earth that we know doesn't really help? That was the shrug emoji for me, most definitely.
Okay.
It sort of felt like one of those like power hours that's telling you to take another shot or do something so that this will make sense and you'll be on the level you need to be on to make it make sense when you get to the last time she takes it. Because I watched this stone cold sober, not even like a beer or a glass of wine or like playing with catnip for the cat. I was like completely in my right mind and I understood nothing. And so I feel like had I taken like an actual beverage every time she did, maybe I would have had a better time.
Well, damn, now I gotta watch it a fifth time so I can have the mother drinking game.
Just drink about it, don't go back in. Like you've been through it enough.
Okay, thank you.
You deserve peace, Michael. You deserve peace.
Thank you, Shrek. this is my intervention, I think. This ended up being my mother intervention with the two of you. Don't ever go back in, Michael. Don't ever go back in.
Nothing there.
I don't know why the way you said that was very, I won't let go, Jack.
And then she did, but that's a different podcast as well.
I was about to say, we're not going to hop on that sinking ship. No.
Literally.
No. The rabbit holes.
3 hours later, and there was Rem on the door.
We're going to close the door on that one.
Board it up like the attic. We don't want Michelle Pfeiffer going back in. I believe that brings us to 6 Degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer. So for those of you joining us for the first time, we end every episode with a little game we love to call 6 Degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer, which is where we give each other an actor or actress, and we have to connect them back to Michelle Pfeiffer via other actors and actresses in 6 degrees or less. However, when we have a guest on, we have some different rules. So we offer the guest an option. They can either join in the shenanigans and we will give each other people in a round robin style, or they can be the one to give Michael and I our options and try to stump us. So Sheree, those are your options. Which would you like to choose?
I'm clearly going to give you actors because that's more fun for me.
Yes, watch us struggle.
These are going to be probably easier than I think they are, but I just could not connect those dots. Or they're going to be the hardest ones and we'll just be here for a few days bonding.
Who would you like to start with?
I have two names here. I numbered them. I think one might be easier than the other, but that could be a bold-faced lie. So pick a number, one or two, and I'll give you.
Choose a number, Michael.
There's so many to choose from. Number one.
Alfre Woodard.
Okay. So Alfre Woodard was in 12 Years a Slave with Michael Fassbender, who was in X-Men Days of Future Past or X-Men First Class or one with Jennifer Lawrence, who was in Mother with Michelle.
Very nice.
For a second, I was about to say that Michelle was in an X-Men movie, and I was like, nope, that's not right.
It would be a better movie had she been there.
I was about to say that's the way to get me to watch those X-Men movies, though.
The second actor I had is Lynn Whitfield.
Okay. I saw a Lynn Whitfield movie recently.
East by You?
Oh, I was looking her up. I was like, I know her face, but I was like, oh, there we go. There she is.
She was everywhere in the 90s. But
right.
Yeah. And then sort of tapered off, but will randomly appear to be like, I can still do this and I'm still ageless. I should go back into hiding.
Eve's Bayou, we have Samuel L. in there. Mm-hmm. Samuel L. We can do Samuel L. So Michelle is in Hairspray with John Travolta, who is in Pulp Fiction with Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, fabulous.
Yay.
There we go.
Yay. Get it.
That
good picture. Eh?
That was a very good picture.
Thank you.
I was just like, Lynn Whitfield. We got to remember those 90s movies. Where did we last see Lynn Whitfield?
Wasn't she also in the Cheetah Girls? Wasn't she Raven's mom in the Cheetah Girls?
I could see that, actually.
Let me see. Yep. She is Dorothea Garibaldi in the Cheetah Girls. Yep, she's Raven's mom.
Love it. No, I picked them because I've recently been complaining a lot on other podcasts about the way Alfred was handled in Annabelle, if you're familiar with the Conjuring universe. And so I have a very, very long rant about that, which I won't give here because we've been here for a minute. And then like Lynn Whitfield, because like I was talking to somebody and like this person always remembers the face in the movies, but not her name. I'm like, who's that? And I'm like, no, you know her. We've watched the movies together. And so that's how I came to these two. And I thought Lynn would be the hardest one because I forgot all about Hairspray.
And she was. Until I started going through that Eve's Bayou Rolodex. Indeed, she was.
Yep.
Well, Sheree, this has been delightful, as we knew it would be. Thank you so much for being on here. Can you tell people all about you and your podcast and where they can find you on the social medias?
Yes. So to follow me and my ramblings and rants, you can track me down on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Sheree. That's MISSSHARAI. To hear about my horror podcast, where I have many rants and thoughts about lots of things on there as well. you can track us down at A Nightmare Fierce on Twitter and A Nightmare on Fierce Street on Facebook and Instagram.
Thank you so much for being on here with us for this one. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's so good to have another voice to add to the Mother discourse.
Yeah, thank you, because I had not seen this movie. It's been on my list forever. And so I'm happy I was able to watch it and then come to find support 2 days later in my thinking and processing, because I don't know what happened.
That's what we're here for.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are not just the Michelle Pfeiffer podcast. We're also a support group. well, Pfeiffer fans, this has been another episode of Pfeiffer Fridays. I am Michael McLean, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Michael D. McLean.
And I am Jerry Downey, and you can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JerryDowney913.
Please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It makes us easier to find so we can continue to spread the Michelle gospel. You can also find updates about the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Pfeiffer Fridays. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being here, Sheree. And we will see you again next week for Pfeiffer Fridays. And please don't forget to brace your sinks.
Why don't you want kids?
Excuse me?
I saw how you reacted earlier. I know what it's like when you're just starting out and you think you have all the time in the world. And, you know, you're not going to be so young forever. Have kids. Then you'll be creating something together. This is all just setting. Oh, you do want them.